A lot can happen between falling in love with a house online and owning it. Between imagining living there and breathing in your new home for the first time. Having an advocate who can help you navigate the complex world of financing, inspections, negotiating, analyzing the market, and talking through any anxieties that may pop up, that can make all the difference. That's what the expertise of a Realtor can do for you. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors and bound by a code of ethics. Because that's who we are.
Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Of the Eddie Trunk Podcast, which is new every Thursday, podcast1.com and iTunes. Hope you guys are doing well, and thank you for downloading, streaming, checking out the Eddie Trunk Podcast wherever you grab it, whether it be iTunes or, of course, at podcast1.com. Always good to have you tuned in for an episode talking with some of the biggest names in rock. Hope you guys enjoyed last week with Joe Elliott and Neil Sean. If you missed that, be sure to go back and grab some of the past episodes of the Eddie Trunk Podcast and save them. Listen to them at your leisure. If you're hearing this on post day on Thursday, then that means I am just getting back from my first of two back-to-back cruises, Cruise to the Edge, which is a progressive rock cruise. And it means that I've got a couple days off in Tampa, and that means that tonight or today and tomorrow, the 8th and 9th of February, if you're listening on those days and you're in the Tampa area, I'll be at the Hard Rock, the Seminole Hard Rock in Tampa, where I'll be broadcasting my volume show live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time from the Hard Rock Cafe in the casino on Thursday and Friday, the 8th and the 9th. So come on down and check it out if you get a chance. And love to have you guys part of the broadcast if you happen to be in Tampa. Then from there, I go to Miami, get ready to get on board the Monsters of Rock cruise, which I host and will also broadcast from. So if you have Sirius XM, be sure to listen to all the action wherever you are, wherever I am, live 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time, replaying every night 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, are always downloadable to listen to when you want on the Sirius XM app. It all happens on Sirius XM channel 106 volume, and the show is Trunk Nation, and that show is where the interviews on this podcast originate. You get a little sampling, just a little taste of the interviews that I do on a daily basis over on the volume show right here on this program. So this week, an interview that comes from a couple weeks ago and the NAMM show in Southern California. If you are unfamiliar with what NAMM is, it is a massive gathering, about 100,000 people from the music community, mostly people who are retailers or equipment manufacturers who gather together to kind of hawk their wares and show off their new equipment and things like that. I was there because I hosted an event the Wednesday before called the Hall of Heavy Metal History, which Lizzie Hale was inducted into. And I also hosted a Montrose show, and I also did an appearance at the Bose booth. So I had a good time there at the NAMM show with all the great artists that I ran into. Some of them I touched on last week's podcast. Lizzie Hale was nice enough to come by my radio show, which I broadcast from the Wyndham in Anaheim, California. Lizzie came by with her bandmate and her boyfriend, actually, Joe Hottinger from the band, Hailstorm, the guitarist in the band. And we had a great conversation about music and other things. Joe and Lizzie are just really great people. They really are. I've known them for a while. They're personable. They're good people. They're still fans. They get it. They don't put themselves above anybody. They're still so respectful about where they came from and the music that shaped them. And it's always been something I've really appreciated about them. They've always worn their influences on their sleeve as well. And a lot of it is 80s hard rock that I certainly grew up with. And Lizzie, who is younger, as is Joe, certainly grew up with to some degree as well, although it was probably their parents in some instances that played some of that stuff for them. So it's always great to talk music. Lizzie Hale is an unbelievable singer. She performed later the night you hear this interview solo, and I thought it was going to be acoustic, but it was not acoustic. It was Lizzie with an electric guitar, and Joe had said to me, he was not part of the performance later that night, but he did say to me, watch this, it's going to be amazing. And she just comes out and chunks out some chords and sings over the top of it, and it was absolutely stunning. I wish I had it on video. She did a little bit of Hailstorm stuff, but then she also worked in some Sabbath and some other things. It was incredibly cool. I'm sure she's done it before. Maybe you guys have a chance to see it somewhere down the line. But Lizzie's going to talk about what's going on in Hailstorm and music in general. And important to note, she walked in the middle of me doing a music news segment with my producer, Ed Robinson. So at the top of this interview, you'll hear it's a little bit strange because I'm in the middle of some other things, and she just sits down and I just start to include her and Joe in the conversation, which was kind of fun. So take it in the context of how she walked into the room and what I was in the middle of, and you'll see how she gets to chime in and gets right involved in the conversation. Remember, you guys, if you're shopping on Amazon, always start at amazon.com/shop/Eddie Trunk. Appreciate you doing that. Remember to follow me on social media, especially Twitter, where I'm most active, at Eddie Trunk. Also Instagram and Facebook as well. EddieTrunk.com is the website. All right, little break, and we'll come right back, and we'll get into it with Joe and Lizzie from Hailstorm on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
So if you guys are looking to buy a car, you're probably familiar with the term, like, terms like MSRP, you might even know what it stands for, but what does it actually mean? Same goes for invoice, list price, and dealer price. It's enough to confuse anybody. And you're really looking for, and what you really want, is a price that actually means something. Introducing True Price from True Car. Now you can know exactly what others will pay, or what you'll pay, I should say, not others, what you will pay for the car you want, including fees and accessories, before you even get to the dealership. True Car dealers will show you the true price on cars like the one you want, all from the comfort of home. And how do you know if your true price is a great price? Because True Car shows you what other people paid for that same car you want. And your certified dealers know this, so they set their true price competitively so they can win your business. So when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit True Car to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Hey, y'all, this is Matt.
And Michelle from Thug Kitchen, here to tell you about our new show, Forked Up, a Thug Kitchen podcast exclusively on Podcast One.
We're stepping out of the kitchen and into your earbuds every week to discuss food, politics, pop culture. Basically, we're just trying to give a f***ing do better.
Get your shit together with us every Thursday on Forked Up, a Thug Kitchen podcast, right here on Podcast One.
Download and listen to new episodes exclusively on PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
Thanks, y'all.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Welcome back to the Eddie Trunk Podcast. And this week, ladies and gentlemen, it is Joe Hottinger and Lizzie Hale from the band Hailstorm. Joe and Lizzie walked in the middle of me doing a news segment with my producer, Ed, on my volume show. So that's why it picks up in a little bit of a weird spot, but you'll get the hang of it as we go, and enjoy a great conversation with Lizzie and Joe on this week's Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Were you guys, when you first started, did you read in the press comparisons to you that you sounded like other acts or anything? Did you catch any of that?
For me, especially when I started developing my voice and everything, there was definite connotations to like Ann Wilson from Heart and stuff like that. That wasn't bad press at all, but it was interesting to start like developing that and then listen to other singers and not just try to kind of be that. But But yeah, I don't know. It, like, you know, if you want to laugh at any point in time, all you got to do is Google Hailstorm 1999 and do the and listen to the kind of stuff that we were doing back in the day.
The keytar days.
The keytar days, yeah. And it, I don't know what it sounds like, but it was definitely you can't embarrass me anymore.
What's keytar?
She was rocking
it's
the
like,
keytar.
It's like it, right before I started guitar, I transitioned from piano to keytar, which is basically an upright keyboard.
The thing that you wear like a
on.
Guitar?
Hell
like,
yeah.
You rocked that?
Yes, I did. And I loved every minute of it. And now I look back and I'm like, wow.
You had dance moves with
your
dad and your brother?
I did. I made them do that.
It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Because I was watching a lot of 80s music videos and they had all the like, okay, everybody's like kind of got some choreography.
Like Robert Palmer sort of stuff. And were you super poppy at that point? Because that wouldn't be hard rocking to me.
I think we thought we were more psychedelic hard rock than we actually were. We were listening to a lot of, it was a weird mixture of like, I want to say Deep Purple, and there was like Cinderella in there and Bon Jovi.
But without a guitar.
Wait, yeah. There was no guitar?
There was no guitar.
Wait, no, you had a little guitar player, dude.
Yeah, that came after 99.
Joe, you weren't in this?
No. This is pre... That was,
that's why he's bringing it up, because he's like, I'm
going
to pre
Joe. I know. There aren't any YouTube videos of Joe in 99.
No.
Joe's like, do the whole interview talking about that, because I had nothing to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Keytar. And that's in his video on YouTube.
There is. And I often wonder... So what the hell was that guy thinking? Because it's not like we had anything going on for us. We were just, you know, teenagers. You know, I was like 14 and playing
a
guitar.
So there's a guy with a big camera. You were playing in front of some bank, just like videotaping
you
guys. And
it was some street fest that
we
were playing.
Oh, so it was shot. It was not shot by like your family or anything?
Oh, hell no.
It's like,
this
that's
is just some guy.
Weird.
Yeah, it was really weird. And I'm like, I wonder what
he had like
guy
archives
is.
Of this. He'd come to shows and just video them all. The
really?
Time, like zooming in on Lizzie.
You realize it's like, well, what kind of person kind of does that? And, you know, obviously, I was,
I don't know.
At the time, I was, 14 and my brother was like 11. Yeah.
A little creepy.
It's a little creepy.
So, was this posted by the guy, like after you became popular?
After we became popular, all that stuff went out. And it's so funny because some of our fans on Twitter like would start like, hey, look what I found. I'm like, oh, no. So that's why I say you can't embarrass me anymore because it's already out there.
Oh, my God. So, that is crazy, though, like that he knew that to follow you along the way enough to say, oh, okay, look, now Hailstorm's popular. Now I got this, and I'm just going to put it out there.
Well, that's okay. So either
he's passed away, too. So
either
whatever.
He was that smart, or as in he saw something in us, or he just, you know, had it for his own reasons. And then later on, like, oh, guess what? They became popular.
Let me ask you this. If he would have come to you and asked you if you could put this, if I could put that out, would you have let him or would you just paid him hush money?
No. Oh, like to me now?
Yeah.
Oh, it's fine. Like the great positive thing about that happening is that when I tell the story about how, oh no, we started when we were 13, you know, oh, okay, you started in your parents' living room. Like, no, we were playing like happy hour at bars and street fest and stuff when we were 13. So now there's proof out there that we were doing it for better or worse.
Yeah. That's awesome. There's an event happening tonight that I hosted last year. I'll be hosting again tonight called the Hall of Heavy Metal History. And someone being inducted at her ripe old age into a heavy metal Hall of History. Do you feel like you've created a ton of history, Lizzie Hill?
It's, you know, good and bad, probably.
We just looked at some of it. Yeah. That alone, that should be your walkout thing. Put that up on the screen.
Good 3 a.m. like binge YouTube watching.
We just pulled up Hailstorm 1999 during the break, and we looked at Lizzie rocking the keytar.
Yeah,
and her dad with the full on dance moves playing bass.
You know, that's something I don't understand either. Like I had these grandiose ideas. And somehow just my brother and my dad just went along with it. There was nobody saying like, no, maybe that's weird. No, let's just do that in public though. Yes, absolutely. Of course we will.
And let's have a creepy guy
shoot it. Yeah, of course.
But tell me a little bit about what you guys have going on, because do you come to NAMM every year? Are you guys regulars?
We used to, we haven't in a second, just from, you know, just we've been busy and it's usually, oh, hey, we're touring now or we're doing something else. And right now we're almost done making a record.
How's that going?
Good. We're doing it with Nick Raskulinitz, who, you know, is a, you know, legend in his own right.
Sure.
And it sounds awesome. And we're excited. Now it's just like, okay, can we get it out now?
Yeah, we fly from here to Canada tomorrow to start a Stone Sour tour with Stone Sour. Because touring in Canada in January.
February. Oh yeah, who does that?
Why not?
Apparently, we do.
But you know what? If you get a chance to play with Corey and those guys, you know,
oh yeah,
be
no,
great.
They're great.
Go do it, right?
Yeah, but... and so we got that. It's like 2.5 weeks, and we go back and finish the record. We only have like 2 weeks left on it. Just some vocals and candy,
like
stuff
candy
on top.
Stuff, yeah.
You know,
you doing the record in Nashville?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So and Nick is producing it. And
correct.
Did I read that you wanted to, you're going for a little harder edge with this one? Is that accurate?
Yeah. Like how would you, it's really hard
I guess
to describe.
I mean, it rocks. It's the heaviest stuff we've ever done, which everyone always says, but there are some riffs and you'd be like, wow, I don't know. That's crazy. And, I don't know. It's just, it's cool. It's as us as.
Yeah. We don't like, we just don't like staying in the same lane because, you know, as you know, like, album cycles for rock right now, it's like, okay, 3 years is one album cycle and you're a whole different person than you were in the beginning of it. So it's like, it's really hard for us to kind of go back. So we just kind of keep moving forward.
And we went in there we did it so different than the last three records. We went in like last January with Nick and we're like, we don't know what to do. What do we do? We don't like have any songs or anything. And he's like, it's cool.
That's where a good producer comes in, right? Because that's where you really need a producer at that phase.
And that's like his forte. He did it with Korn. He did it, you know, with Rise Against on their new one. He did it with Deftones and just what he does. And he was like, when's the last time the four of you got in a room and wrote together? And we're like, wow, it's been a while. And he's like, let's start there. And we're like, okay. So who's got a riff? And we just started jamming and he'd like pop in. That was cool. Do that again. I'm like, okay. Mm-hmm. And just start building songs from nowhere. It was great.
Yeah, we kind of found our mojo again and like just our place. And it's just sonically, you know, I think it's going to be the first time that you can actually hear what everybody brings to the table in our band instead of it just being kind of like, oh, well, okay, Lizzie sings and there's something going on in the background.
Right.
You know, so it's, I mean, and especially considering my little brother as a drummer, Nick is like the drum whisperer. He like just loves him and he's such a drum nerd. And, you know, he did, you know, the last two Rush records,
right,
you know,
right.
and he's such a drum nerd and he just brought some stuff out of RJ that we're all in the control room. Like, how did you get him to do? He just did that. Like, it takes a lot to surprise us with little bro because we know him so well.
And
so,
he's an amazing player. So him to have upped his game, is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
He's went to another level.
Absolutely. He's at a whole other level and he finally has kind of a producer that has the patience and I want to say like the psychological, how to bring that out of him, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, he's the drum whisperer.
But was that good for you guys to go in? And so basically what you're saying is you wrote in the studio, you wrote as you recorded the record, right?
Well,
you ever done anything like that before where you kind of went in naked?
No, we used to do that before, before we were signed, you know, but since our first, released record, it's been like, okay, get all the songs together. Everybody agrees on a list and then we just go in and do it.
Co-write
with a million people.
Now
we have 100 songs. Yeah, exactly.
It was cool. Ari and our guy was awesome. Last January, he came over to our house. He was like, so I don't have an agenda. Let me know when you think you have the record written and we'll start talking. And we're like, okay. We're going to work with Nick. Cool. He's like, cool.
Are you sick?
It was awesome.
No, what's going on?
and was there any, because you were writing in the studio, was there pressure to get it done quickly? Because, I mean, studio time is money time. Or do you guys own the studio? Is it your own place?
No, it's not our own place. We kind of got carte blanche. I mean, as far as label goes, they haven't really been pressuring us at all. It's more us like, okay, time to get back on tour.
Right.
You know, it's like, we love y'all, but, you know.
Well, I'm looking for. You got a target date to put it out?
No.
No, not yet. That's the last kind of thing we got to do here.
But it'll be this year.
Yeah.
Tonight there's an event happening called the Hall of Heavy Metal History, and they are there's a great guy by the name of Pat Gesualdo who does this. There's a charitable angle to it. He asked me to host it last year. It was a fun thing. This is the second year. He has stepped it up big time this year because last year, Lizzie and Joe, you guys weren't there, but we were in a little – kind of a little business center about a mile from here. And this, I'm watching him build a stage out and everything. I'm like, whoa, this guy stepped it up. So
that's awesome.
He must have known because he was inducting you. He
had to
up the game.
Yeah, right.
He knows how high maintenance you can be.
Apparently. Yeah.
We got a diva coming in, boys.
Yeah.
Build it up.
How did this get on your radar?
You know, I'm not even really sure. I found out. Found honestly, here. I found myself on. There was a. It was floating around, and I'm on a list. I'm like, are you sure that's, you know, I'm supposed to be on the list? It's really cool, and I'm extremely flattered and, you know, honored because, I mean, I'm still, you know, we talk about, okay, yeah, I've been doing this for 20 years, but I'm still like new kid on the on the block here, and so just to be next to everybody and get to see everybody tonight and, you know, get that kind of thing going on. It's really neat.
Yeah, it should be fun. And it's cool that it's like Bill Ward from Black Sabbath is going to be here, and then going to be here, and then there's this mix of different people. So it's cool to touch on different eras, different genres, and it should be a fun night. And I was just telling Pat, who runs it, I was so focused on making sure this radio broadcast was working. I'm hosting this thing. What am I doing
what
again?
Am I, doing?
Like, you know, I should, in a few hours, I've got to be up there doing it. But yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be loose and all that. You know, during the break, we were talking about festivals. And I saw you guys last at Louder Than Life, where we were talking and hanging out a little bit. You guys play a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And what do you like so much about them? And are there any cons to them or things you don't like about doing these festivals? Because there's more than we've ever had in America. What's your thoughts about what's going on there?
I like that there's more than we've ever had because, I mean, that's something that, especially like when you're a kid, I mean, you see these like live videos or live broadcasts of like your favorite bands are playing, you know, and you know, back in the day, like it was most of them were in Europe, and so you see all this stuff, and like just it's like the crowd isn't even like individual people anymore. It's just one big monster and this thing that you get to play with, and you know, there's no way that you can compete with that type of energy. And so we really enjoy it just for that aspect. You kind of lose your mind a little bit at the, you know, just up on stage and with all those people, and everyone's there for one reason, and that's just to have fun and listen to their favorite bands. And it's just such a neat vibe always, you know. It's, there's never any like, you never get going to a festival where there's like this negative like, wow, I can't believe we're all here. Like there's that doesn't exist.
Unless it's that Fire Fest or whatever that one was that was the disaster.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it can always turn bad.
No, it's always like a family reunion too, all the bands that we've toured with over the years, and you make friends with new bands, and it's just fun.
Yeah. Have you guys shared stages with bands that you discovered through playing festivals that you really didn't know much about, that you got turned on to some music or bands that you would have seen that way?
When was the last time that happened?
You know, we kind of got to know the Gojira guys, and we went and saw them on a day off. We had a day off in between. We're all playing the same festivals this fall, and we saw Code Orange opening up for them.
Yeah.
And I'd never...
I haven't seen them.
Oh, my God. Well, okay. I was like...
Their album is incredible, but I'm so glad that I got to see them live because they attack the crowd. They literally just lay waste.
And
it was so funny because it was so obvious that, you know, most of those people had not seen them before.
Yeah.
And you just see the crowd absolutely turn over in a matter of like, I want to say like a song or two.
Yeah. I've never seen a band throw that much energy off the stage. Like for 30, I was sitting there like looking at them, like my neck was hurting watching them. Like, oh my God, that is not sustainable.
But what's interesting, you know, what I have heard about them is that I'm good friends with Ben, Ben Wyman from Dillinger Escape Plant. Mm-hmm. And he's my neighbor. He lives in the same town as me in Jersey, actually.
Nice.
And Code Orange just opened. Dillinger Escape Plant retired. They mm-hmm. ended. They did farewell shows just before the holidays because they're so physical and so insane mm-hmm. that they're actually worried about killing themselves and being
so rock and
really
roll.
Injured. I mean, because they actually do. It's insane what they do. So they ended. They just did like farewell shows, and Ben's like probably 10 years younger than me, and I'm like, dude. And he's like, I'm telling you, you know, you can't do it anymore. But Code Orange was the band that opened their final shows.
Yeah.
And I saw people that were at those shows and they were like, well, this is interesting because here's Dillinger who kind of set this bar saying goodbye, ushering in this band Code Orange who's taking that baton.
Yeah.
So if that band's anywhere in Dillinger world, I can't even imagine. Are they like crazy? It's crazy, extreme musically too.
It's tempo changes. Somehow they're able to like kind of throw all this chaos out there and still have it like make sense in your brain. It's not just chaos for chaos's sake. They're crafting this, and it's
They're just super heavy riff changes, tempo, and they're tight and
they're all yelling and singing, and it's cool.
But is there singing or is it screaming?
There's some screaming. People love screaming stuff.
It's not for me, but I understand. But that's a thing. I mean, that's why I could never do it. I respect it, but I personally can't listen to death metal or screamo.
They have two songs that Reba sings that are more melodic and kind of in the back type.
Yeah,
of thing,
and I'm not like a huge metalhead either. I'm kind of the same way. But there's a few bands that like. I just love like Gojira, and these Code Orange kids are awesome.
Gojira, I like what Gojira's doing. I like the last record because there are moments where he's singing. He's starting to sing a little bit. And, you know, a band that I got into much later and Troy's coming on this show on Monday, as a matter of fact, is Mastodon. Mm. They've gotten, like, I like what they've done more recently than their earlier stuff. Their earlier stuff was proggy, and there's much attention to the vocal. Now there's melody and they're singing. I mean, that's what I'm a sucker for. Yeah. I always love that sort of stuff.
Me too.
But I respect the over-the-top sort of stuff because from an energy standpoint, you're like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
But it's not something I'm personally going to crank up in, you know, my iPod. But there's a lot of people that do. A lot of people love it.
And these Code Orange kids are, like we were talking about before, like they're young too. So who knows they'll develop into, you know.
Where are they from? Are they American?
Pittsburgh, yeah.
Oh, they are. Yeah.
They got the Grammy nomination this year. They're like killing it.
And one of you guys mentioned Reba. Is that a woman?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a woman
guitar
in the band?
Player. Yeah.
Wow.
Guitar player, and she sings a little bit too.
She sings and screams.
Yeah.
Too.
I always love when you see those things, like when they credit it, it's like clean vocal.
Yeah.
Like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
It's the person who actually sings, and then there's the person
who
screams.
Here's the screamer.
But that's a tough thing. I mean, I was talking to Randy from Lamb of God, and he was telling me that on their last record, he actually did a song where he sang.
Oh,
and
wow.
It's called Overlord, I think, is the title of it. And he said, I said, Randy, yeah, you finally did one that I got into that. You know, it's great hearing you sing. And he's like, I'll never forget, he was at Rock on the Range like a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and he's getting coffee. And he's just, you know, if you know Randy, he's just shaking. So he's like, yeah, but believe it or not, fans gave me shit about singing. And I'm like, in what world do you get shit for singing versus screaming? He's like, yeah,
in that world, I guess.
Can't do this shit too much more singing like that way. I got to. I was like, do it. You'll be fine. You'll be
fine. It's fine. That's hilarious.
Yeah. So the other thing I want to ask you guys about is, and I love that you've always done, is these EPs where you've done covers. And like, you've worn your influences so much on your sleeve, and I think it's so cool.
For better or worse.
No, but it's so cool that you do that. And you did different stuff, like Priest, Dissident, Aggressor, like, you know, different things you wouldn't expect. You know, the Manson song you did, you wouldn't expect. So when, talk about the reason for doing that. Like, is that just for fun, or is that a way to show the varied influences you had in your career?
It's a little bit of both. To me, it is for fun because it's kind of like a no pressure way to get in the studio and do something cool or experiment with different things. And in a lot of ways, we get to kind of pick songs that we've never really tackled, even like in our own music, like just the way the riffage is, or, you know, or the way that I'm singing. And sometimes that'll inspire new songs or maybe even a direction for the next record. So there's that. But also, it's just such a great way to introduce yourself to people, because for people that haven't really gotten into your music, or, you know, can't be bothered to like sit down and listen to your entire catalog, maybe you're playing their favorite song. Maybe you're playing their favorite Whitesnake song or their favorite Priest song. And if you do it well, they're like, oh, maybe I should, you know, hang out and listen. And then on the other aspect, it's just a fun thing for the already existing fans too. It's like, oh, they did this song, and it's just, here's something else. You know, in a day and age where it's like, there's such a small attention span, and in the rock world, like I said, there's like 3-year album cycles, you know. It's like, okay, let's put out something new, anything new quickly. And so we go in for a song a day. We've done that forever. It's like we book, you know, for like a song a day for the EPs. And man, this last one, we changed our mind last minute. And the last day we decided to do Ride the Lightning, and the whole time we're doing it, we're like, why did we pick Ride the Lightning again?
Wait a minute, did that one come out?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get that one. So what's on the last one? Ride the Lightning?
What's on the last one? Ride the Lightning, Still the Night,
Still
White
the
Snake.
Night.
We did Hate Myself for Loving You, Joan Jett, Just Because.
Fell in Black Days.
Fell in Black Days.
I got to get this one.
Yeah.
Then we did Heathens, and then one of our label friends' favorite song is Damn, I Wish I Was Your Lover by, is her name? Yeah.
Sophie B. Hawkins.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So we did that anyway, and it was fun.
Wow, I got to get that one. Joe, did you take the solo in Soul of the Night?
Oh,
yeah.
Hell yeah. Ride the Lightning. And I've never seen his fingers move that fast. Yeah,
so you did a little John Sykes action.
Well, I wouldn't compare. I don't know John Sykes, and I just did my thing.
But you did the chinka 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 ching, all that stuff too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the little thing is in there. Yeah.
And then he just does those runs going into
it. We were like listening to him.
I don't know about those runs. Come on.
Are those strings or is it guitar? Screw it. We'll do it with guitar.
You know, the reason why I bring that up is because I was watching, I'm a huge fan of John Sykes, and a lot of people don't know that John's the guy actually played on the 87 record and co-wrote it. And because when those videos came out for those songs, covered out a whole different band, miming every. Nobody in the video for Still of the Night is on the song with the exception of David Coverdale. It's a whole different band that actually played that music you're hearing. And I never went to see Whitesnake really on those tours. I was just such a big Sykes fan. I'm like, not to say that Vivian Campbell and Adrian Vandenberg were any slouches who did that. But the 87 Whitesnake record just had its 30th anniversary, and they put out a special edition. And on it is video and audio of those tours of them. And I was like, I'm going to listen to this because I'm really curious how those two guitar players live tackled at the time was a new record of all Sykes.
Yeah.
And let's just say they did their interpretation of it.
Yeah, right.
It's not, and those are world-class players. I'm not putting them down, but I'm just saying that it was just.
It's a different
A different beast. And you could just tell that what Adrian Vandenberg was doing on the Still of the Night solo is it's kind of over there, but it's not really that.
Yeah, no, I did my version of, I just did what I,
Right.
I wrote my own solo.
Well, as you should. I mean, that's the other thing too, though. If you're going to do a cover, right, mm-hmm. you should actually put some of your own spin on it too. Because if it's note for note, what's the point?
It's weird.
Well, and we've done that nearly every time because, I know bands and people that have prided themselves no, we're doing it exactly the same way, even down to the production, when they do covers. I'm like, but you're never gonna be that band. You're never gonna be that band. So don't disrespect the song and try to make a dance version of it or something weird. But do your thing. And so for us, it's always comes down to how would we do this live? If we had to perform it tomorrow, how would we arrange this as the four of us? How would we do this? And so, helps.
With the Metallica, with Ride the Lightning, we kept it pretty close, but
we didn't have a choice. We had one day.
But the difference is her ripping it. She
of course.
Popped the octave, something that James would never do, and it sounded awesome.
Yeah, yeah. You did, what was the Pat Benatar song you did? Hell Is for Children?
Mm-hmm.
Was that, that was killer. Dio, you did Straight Through the Heart, right? Yeah. Which was awesome. I mean, it's the choices. That's what I love about it too. The choices you're making of the songs is not what you would. It's not You're not doing Hit Me with your Best Shot. You're doing some different things and putting your own take on it, which I think is amazing.
Well, those type of tracks just make my heart happy. It's you sing something that you've been listening to for the rest of for most of your life, and just every time it comes on, I don't know. It's you go back to that. Place in your heart where that's where it all started for you kind of thing. And so, and also it's fun to sing those songs because you get to really just kind of conceptualize okay, every song that I sing, whether it be original or cover, should feel like this, it's I want to feel like this when I'm singing any type of song. So
whose idea was it to do of Priest to do Dissident Aggressor?
Was it?
Cause that's
that
a deep track.
No,
was that Delia's?
I think that may have been me, because I remember I had a Priest.
Oh no, that was you, because we were listening to a lot of that.
That intro, Lizzie, I want to hear you do
that. We went down a Priest rabbit hole shortly before that. We're like, we should do one of those. Yeah, no, I think that was you.
Yeah, because that, I don't know if you guys knew this before you did it, but Slayer covered that too.
I know. Well, actually, it's funny because we didn't really do our research beforehand, and then we were playing that song, right? Were we playing that song or something? And right after we had met Carrie King. And he's like,
who's that dude?
Who's that dude trying to do Helfer?
Who's that dude trying to do Helfer?
And then he's like, oh, it's a chick. Okay. And then we became friends, but it was just funny. And he's like, I wish I had known you had done that. I would have gotten up. So like at some point in time, we have a, we have a date, Mr. King.
Yeah. Well, he's going to have a lot of free time soon because he just announced he's ending his band.
I know. I mean,
what kind of world are we in with no Slayer? How do we have a world without Slayer?
I don't understand. We saw them for the first time live in Japan. And like
recently or a while ago?
This was
2012.
2012 was the first time we saw them live. Yeah. And we were playing this. Was it Loud Park?
Yeah, or, Loud Park.
The
Superdome.
Yeah, the Superdome. And
Enormo Dome.
Yeah, and they were playing, and we're watching with Sebastian Bach over here, just you know, doing his thing, and it blew my mind. And I Slayer, you know the songs, you know how awesome they are. But until you see that stuff live,
oh my God.
Like, what did Josh say? It's like the sound of war.
Oh, it's just,
you know, awesome. It was just
soundtrack
incredible.
To hell.
Yep.
Yeah. It's crazy too, but because I have this thing where I am someone who I would much rather see, and I've said this many times, as bands get older, if they don't feel they can do it or deliver like they used to, I would much rather see them end.
Mm-hmm.
Respectfully, still some semblance of how great they were, yeah. Still with at least a couple original members, then stay too long at the party. It's a tough thing because as fans, you want to see these people go on forever, and there's some people, I'll accept anything as long as they're still doing it, but there's a lot of bands that I see that are staying too long at the party, and then you see bands like, listen, Slayer can't go up there and sit on bar stools and strum acoustic guitars. It's got
to
be
raining
blood, you know? And if they feel they can't, and I know Tom's had a lot of neck and shoulder problems from all the years of headbanging and everything, so I'd rather see these bands leave with a great final.
Here it is, yeah.
Memory, like, of what they were, then seeing bands like, oh my God, there's like, what? This is just not what it used to be.
Yeah.
And I mean, I Rush did that. I mean, Rush ended the way they should end. They went out and they did a tour. They played their whole catalog chronologically. Yep. They were in great shape. They played great. And then they're like, okay, we can't do it anymore. And it sucks that there's no more Rush. And I like the last memory of Rush.
And how big of them to do that? Because like I'm sitting here, you know. In my 30s, thinking, man, how am I ever really gonna stop doing this? And so I always remind them, just like, you know, those like big hooks from back in the day.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Someone's gonna have to have that on cut and be like, Lizzie, it's sad now.
Like a comedian
bomb. Yeah, you just
like,
have to stop. Yeah, yeah. You know, someone's gonna like. I'm trusting all of you to tell me.
You got a ways to go before you're worried about that. I mean, you definitely do. I don't think that's an issue, and we've already established when that
and
day comes.
And then there's the holograms. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're gonna get
there's
that.
There's always technology.
Hey, before I let you guys go, you do see a lot of different bands. You toured with. I love the fact that you did that tour with Lita Ford then Dorothy, where you really had.
Oh yeah.
Three different. World sort of colliding there, and not colliding, but you know what I mean. Dorothy's an even younger artist than you, correct?
Yeah.
And then you, and then Lita, who's like, you know, an icon in that world. How did that all go? Did you guys have fun?
We had so much fun, and it was just so crazy because we would find ourselves, you know, just as you know, being a girl in this industry. I'm gonna reverse the conversation that I have every single day. Like, what's it like? But being a girl. In this industry, it's you just view things differently by just hanging out with guys all the time, and like you're a different type of chick than normal chicks that hang out with girls all the time. So it was really neat to like every day we would somehow find ourselves all in the same dressing room and talking about music in the way that, you know, we were brought up or just from our perspective as girls. And it was awesome because here's Dorothy, who's like, you know, LA, like millennial thing. And then she's like looking at me thinking that, you know, for some reason thinking that I'm like, here's a goal, you know?
Right.
And then I'm looking at Lita Ford, like that's a goal.
Right.
So it's like, we all have this like weird take on, you know, each other's journeys and man, I don't know. You've talked to Lita, right?
I know Lita very well.
Yeah,
Lita Ford was the first ever guest in the history of That Metal Show.
Really?
Yeah.
That is awesome.
She was the first ever guest I reached out to. Our very first episode, she was the guest in the pilot. I've known Lita for a long time, ever since she started getting back into doing things again, and her story is incredible.
Oh, it's awesome.
I don't know Dorothy, though, but I've heard nothing but great things, but I don't know much about her.
She's so talented. She's really talented, and I don't think she really knows it. You know, she's not like a diva. She just kind of gets up there and she opens her mouth and she does this. She's an incredible, like, blues singer. And
She has a new song out. She's did a record with Linda Perry. She wrote with Linda, and Linda produced it. Yeah. I think. Like, cool.
Yeah,
it's awesome.
Yeah. Do you see? I mean, it's got to feel good for you, Lizzie, because at least from my vantage point, it's amazing to me how many women I see now in rock and playing in rock bands. Like you just mentioned Code Orange. I didn't know there was a woman in that band, but I see it from my vantage point. Like when I'm out there at all these shows and all these events, it's amazing to me because not only do you see a lot of women mm-hmm. in bands, whether it's an all female band or whether it, you know, whatever it is, or it's a situation like Nita Strauss playing with Alice Cooper, all these great things that are going on. But the other thing that's really cool to me that I see is that backstage at these shows, at these festivals and things like that, there's tons of women now on road crews.
Oh, yeah.
That I've never used to see before. Your assistant sitting right here. But, I mean, it's usually the wardrobe person that's the makeup person. But you're seeing, you know, people up in the lights and tour managers and running the show. I think that's awesome. It's definitely in the last 10 years especially, there's been big strides there, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And it's amazing to see that happening because I remember when we first really started touring in 2005 after we got signed. You know, Detroit will tell you, like, we were the only two, you know, there. And so there was a lot of, like, you know, like with me or with her, like, oh, yeah, the merch station's over there, or the, you know, or who are you dating in the band, that type of thing, you know. And, you know, you brush that. But, like, now it's just kind of like, okay, it's just all there. And it's you know, if it's not 50-50, it's close. And especially at all these festivals, it's just incredible. That's why it's so funny whenever I do an interview and some guy's like, or a girl, whoever, like, so what's it like being one of the only girls in the rock industry? And I'm like, well, this just shows you kind of aren't paying attention.
Yeah, no.
I'm not anymore, you know. And it's empowering. It really is. And it's so inspiring because, you know, we get to watch each other and be inspired by that and be like, okay, it's not impossible, and this is awesome. So,
and last thing before I let you go, I just reminded, talking about playing other people's music or jamming with people, I just had him on the show talking about it. But from your vantage point, the version of Nobody's Fool that you did with Tom Kiefer, that you duetted with him, and it's on the special edition of Tom's latest record, The Way Life Goes, is amazing.
Oh, thank you.
And I saw the video. If you have there's a DVD in it with mm-hmm. you guys actually doing it. I know for you, growing up a fan of that stuff, that had to be pretty amazing. And I know you've done it with them, but to have it on record now is pretty
cool. Absolutely. I mean, it never really gets old. And, you know, from the first time where, like, we were in Alaska somewhere, and Joe here and then his guitar player, Tony, were in cahoots and, like, gave, you know,
Tony
Higbee. And
I think Tony's listening. Hey, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Eastside, you know,
Gamblers.
Yeah.
They hooked us up. And, like, at one point in time, like, you know, Joe came over. He's like, hey, Tom has your number and he's going to call you in 5 minutes. Like, what? What's happening? He wants to sing a song with you. And so we ended up doing Nobody's Fool. And then it just became a thing. And when he, you know, asked me to do it, you know, do a different version with him, and just, like, it's still such an incredible honor, and what a sweet man, and just a golden soul. So, lucked out.
Yeah. Well, now it's there for all time. If you guys haven't heard it, and I know there's a lot of, you know, a lot of guys, a lot of people listen to this show that like Tom and Cinderella stuff, check out Tom's latest record and check out Lizzie and Tom duetting on that. It's just, man, that's some vocal stuff going on between the two of you guys. That's great, great stuff. And I'm so happy for Tom that he can do that again after all he's been through with his voice.
He sounds incredible, it keeps getting better. It's awesome.
I had a friend of mine, good friend of mine, Doug Burgess, out in Tulsa. He was a number of years ago, and Tom had so many problems, and then Tom finally did a show, and Doug called my radio show. He goes, Tom's definitely singing to a track. It's no way that's real. And Tom's like, that's actually a great compliment. He goes, I would never use tracks, but he goes, that's about the best compliment you can get.
That's
you
awesome.
Sound good. We had that conversation off the air about all these bands using tracks and mailing in. So you guys keep it real as well, which of course I appreciate. Hey, it's so great to see you. Look forward to the record. Of course, when it's ready, come back on. And
of
when
course.
You just mentioned you're going to Canada. I mean, we have tons of listeners in Canada. We're on in Canada. So
awesome.
When does it start?
Live.
Tomorrow?
Saturday.
Saturday.
I think is the first show. Stone Sour, us and the Dead Deads, our friends from Nashville.
Okay. And then how many shows through Canada?
It's like,
I don't know.
There's 2 weeks worth?
A couple weeks.
I don't know.
So you're just doing a run up there with them, and then you're going to come back and then finish up
come
on
back,
the record.
Come back, finish out the record, yeah.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to the record. Safe travels.
Thank you. Stay warm up there. Of course.
Well, that was a lot of fun. And again, that interview originated on my SiriusXM show on Volume, Channel 106, which you can hear daily
2 to 4 p.m. Eastern time live and replaying every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, and on demand on the SiriusXM app. I want to thank Katie Irizarry for producing. I also want to say a special thanks to Pat Gesualdo from the Hall of Heavy Metal History for letting me host it and also hooking me up with great accommodations to do my radio show from the hotel around the NAMM show. I've got more great interviews I can bring you in the future. But again, I can only bring you a little taste of what I do on a daily basis on the Volume Show. So I hope you join me over on SiriusXM. I'll do my best to give you a little sampling, though, each and every week here on the Eddie Trunk podcast of the interviews that I do. And again, if you're listening to this on the 8th of February and you happen to be in Tampa, today and tomorrow, the 8th and 9th, I will be at the Hard Rock Casino in Tampa, the Seminole Hard Rock, inside the Hard Rock Cafe from 2 to 4 p.m., doing my SiriusXM show on Volume Live. So come by, say hello, and join in on the broadcast if you'd like. Again, that is happening today and tomorrow, if you're listening to this on post day, at the Hard Rock, in the Hard Rock Cafe in Tampa, before heading to Miami to get ready for the Monsters of Rock cruise. You guys enjoy your week. I'll talk to you next Thursday with another all-new episode of the podcast, which, as usual, is produced by Katie Irizarry. Have a good one.
Podcast One has new shows on our new app. Check out all the cool features to help you explore our exciting new programming, like America's Lakers podcast with Jay Moore, So Random with Corinne Olympios, Attack Each Day, The Harbaugh's podcast, Not Just Sports with Susie Schuster and Rich Eisen, and Sessions with Randy Jackson, as well as your old favorites like The Lady Gang, Steve Austin, Shaquille O'Neal, and Adam Carolla. Get the new Podcast One app in the App Store, Google Play, or PodcastOne.com.
Is this house a good price compared to others in the area? Are prices going up or down? If I don't make an offer right this very moment, will I miss my chance? These are just some of the questions a home buyer might ask. And these are the sorts of questions an agent who is a Realtor can help answer. Because Realtors have the expertise, data, and access to specialty training to help you navigate the process of buying a home. They provide support, guidance, and have your back every step of the way. That's what Realtors do, because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.